Welcome to the Fantasy Finessers Podcast. I'm Eddie Wasser, joined as always by Colin Gabor. Colin, we are back.
How's it going? We are back for some more fantasy football talk. I am very excited. You know, we had a lot of moves in free agency. We took a bit of a hiatus after guiding all of you to winning your fantasy championships. But now we're back, and let's get to it.
It's been over 3 months since the last episode of the Fantasy Finessers, and we know our thousands of listeners out there have waited long and far for this episode to return to the Fantasy Finessers podcast, but we had to drop it after one of the most wild NFL offseasons possibly imaginable. Well, I mean, move after move, you thought the moves would be done, and then there was a new guy requesting a trade, a new signing, a new crazy trade, teams going all in, pushing things together, moving people you thought would never be moved. Crazy stuff has happened, so we had to get here and record this episode, and I think the natural starting place here is just the breadth of these high-talent, big-time receivers moving teams in ways we would not have expected.
Yeah, and these are things that, I mean, obviously the big one, Devontae Adams, arguably the best wide receiver in the game. He's going to Vegas, and you thought, you know, when Aaron Rodgers for Green Bay was offered that big contract, you're like, okay, Adams is staying in Green Bay. Like, these two guys are inseparable. But a astronomical contract, $140 million to Las Vegas for Devontae Adams, and now he and Derek Carr are going to be down there in Vegas slaying it together. And, I mean, Carr's a solid quarterback. He's not Aaron Rodgers. We know that, so maybe the upside is a bit capped. But Devontae Adams, we've seen him excel, you know, just I think this is a great fit. It's not the Green Bay fit that he had with Aaron Rodgers, but I think the biggest beneficiary to this is Derek Carr. It's not Devontae Adams, it's Derek Carr.
I think that's a good point. I think Devontae Adams, his value goes down because there was no better situation for Devontae Adams than the one he had in Green Bay. There's just no way. I mean, yes, Derek Carr is a really good quarterback. They were teammates in college. They have some chemistry, but there's no replacing the chemistry and the connection that Adams had with Rodgers. You just can't do it. So it's going to be more difficult for him. You put him in an offense where in Green Bay, yes, he was kind of the only guy, but it almost didn't matter. Here it matters more in a new offense. Josh McDaniels comes in. It's kind of they're starting from scratch in a lot of ways in Oakland. That's been years.
Yeah, right.
In Vegas. But it's going to be a more difficult situation. I think it probably downgrades him from what you would have said is the clear-cut number one receiver to maybe like somewhere in the, you know, like low wide receiver one, high wide receiver two range.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Adams get drafted inside the top six last year before the season, and he obviously paid that draft stock off. And, you know, the mind meld that was between Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams was, you know, with, you know, like Rob Gronkowski, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, like these kind of guys that just like have these mind melds together. And so one thing that is interesting thing about, not necessarily, this is kind of a narrative based argument as opposed to like a statistical argument.
Oh, narrative based, let's go.
I mean, those are the best kind. The last big signing for a wide receiver by Vegas was Antonio Brown. And I think, you know, they might try to just feed Devontae Adams as much as possible just to prove that this wasn't a mistake. This wasn't like, oh, like this was like another stupid signing. That is completely narrative driven. It is not based on any statistics, but it is interesting.
Yeah, I think that's the argument that they're going all in on him. They give up a first round pick in addition to giving him the most money of any wide receiver in the league. So they're paying him to be the best receiver. They gave up a first round pick in the process. He's going to get a lot of targets, but it's hard to envision when the bar is as high as he set it in Green Bay that can ever be really at that level that it was then.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting offense. I mean, we saw the Raiders make it to the playoffs, and that was with, you know, not a true number one receiver. They had Hunter Renfrow, who really excelled down the stretch, but he's a slot receiver. That is his role.
Value goes down.
His value does go
tanks.
Down. It tanks because the targets was his fantasy
thing,
value.
Yeah.
And I mean, on the outside, they had guys like Bryan Edwards, Zay Jones, and I always thought Bryan Edwards was going to really take a step forward in this offense. He never really got there, so Adams, Waller, Renfrow, that's going to be a really solid receiving core for Derek Carr to work with. You got Josh Jacobs in the backfield as well. I think Derek Carr is the biggest beneficiary for this trade. Obviously, Adams, you're still going to draft him, you know, maybe at the end of the first, beginning of the second round, depending on, you know, the draft, the NFL draft, and then other free agents, you know, that might switch some things up around. But it's going to be really interesting. I think Derek Carr is he might end up being overvalued in fantasy. Obviously, we won't know that until, you know, the start of draft season for fantasy football. But it is, I think Derek Carr is set up for a very good season.
And you kind of look at the other side of the coin here. You look at the Green Bay side of losing this. like, Rodgers' value, you would say at this point, it hasn't mattered. He's been around for so long. He's been so good forever. His value is diminished without Devonta Adams. There's no question. I mean, yes, they're going to have extra draft capital, and whoever they do probably draft a receiver, let's say in the early second round, something like that, that receiver's going to immediately have good fantasy value. But the fact of the matter is that who on that Green Bay team do you right now look to and say that's a high-level receiving option that can even come close to replacing Adams' production? There really isn't one. So from that standpoint, but from the standpoint of Rodgers, I think that entire Green Bay offense has to be diminished at least a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen Aaron Rodgers. He had, like, the MVP season, the other MVP season. But then before that, he was kind of shaky. That there was injury notes. I think he had, like, a shoulder injury or something like that. Wasn't as mobile as he used to be getting up there in age. But, you know, I think this Devonta Adams thing, like, I mean, you listen to some of Aaron Rodgers' interviews. He's like, yeah, me and Devonta, like, have, like, this chemistry. Like, I just know what he's going to do, and I just put the ball where I need to put it, and he's going to make the catch. There are no other wide receivers that, you know, that can just have that instant snap chemistry. Like, Alan Lazard has been with this team for a long time, but, you know, he's not Devonta Adams. So it is going to be tough. They still have Aaron Jones. They signed him for a long-term deal. So that is, you know, helpful on the running side of the ball. But there isn't a lot that you can do to recoup, you know, it's a chasm that Devonta Adams leaves.
Yeah, so kind of transitioning, you mentioned there's a lot to get to. We got a jam-packed episode today. The next one that comes to mind that was a shocker when it came down was Tyreek Hill. And I think even more so than Adams, because Adams, right, the blueprint's there. You're still playing with the top 12 or so quarterback in Derek Carr in the league with Vegas. And, you know, there's still a lot of upside there. And I think Tyreek Hill, he obviously gets traded to Miami. He had requested a trade after they were unable to work out a new contract negotiation in Kansas City. I think that he's hampered more by his new situation even than Devontae is, just because of the reliance kind of on, and I think, like, his deep ball metrics did take a step back last season as they used him more as an intermediate guy and a yak guy who was able to catch it shorter and go down the field. That being said, I think his value is pretty substantially hampered in Miami because of the limitations that the quarterback has there. Tua is just not going to be able to get the ball in the same spots that Mahomes was able to because they're very, very different quarterbacks, obviously. So I think his value goes down a lot here.
Yeah, we talked a lot about this Chiefs offense last season. We did. You know, how defenses were kind of adapting to that just chuck it down the field mentality that Patrick Mahomes has had. And we saw, you know, Tyreek Hill get a lot more targets, but kind of lower those big play potential and those yards. And Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, he's 28th best, or, I mean, that's close to bottom.
Fourth worst,
exactly, in terms of quarterbacks with big pass plays, which is 20-plus yards last season. And that's with a guy like Jalen Waddle who can, you know, and that's not 20-plus air yards, that's just 20-plus yards. So Jalen Waddle can take screen passes, go 20-plus yards. So it's just not a dynamic offense at this point. It really isn't. I mean, we saw them win 7 straight games, and then, you know, there's also a coaching change down there in Miami as well. So Tua's stock is going to rise. Obviously, he's got one of the fastest wide receivers in the league, one of the most talented wide receivers in the league, but it's still, like, these two styles, they may not mesh well. And especially, you know, you have Tyreek Hill, and also, I mean, Jalen Waddle just takes a huge hit.
Oh, huge.
We were really excited about him last season. He was huge. Really coming to his own. And, you know, Waddle is a kind of similar to Hill in profile. They're both, you know, smaller body wide receivers, really quick. But, I mean, Hill is just, he's going to easily take over the top role in that offense.
Yeah, this is a tough one for Waddle people. Especially, like, if you've Waddle in Dynasty, this is a killer for you. Yeah. It's a killer. I mean, you know, there's some reason to be encouraged. Mike McDaniel's coming, but it just feels like with the quarterback there, there is a fundamental cap on what that offense can be. You flip it over to the other side and you look at Kansas City. You mentioned we talked about them a lot last year. Travis Kelce now all of a sudden. It's more difficult for him. He already had some signs of maybe before the playoff run, well, the fantasy playoff run in, you know, that week 15 game against the Chargers, obviously, where he really turned it on a lot of the season. He hadn't been quite as good as he had been in past years. And now without Hill, there's going to be even more coverage on him over the middle when you don't have that over-the-top threat like Tyreek. They do add Juju Smith-Schuster on a one-year deal. But again, there's no replacing Tyreek. He's one of the most electrifying players in the league. It's going to be a step back in some respects for them.
You know, Juju Smith-Schuster is interesting. He's a completely different player than Tyreek Hill. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, but a lot of his tough, like, season before the injury, you know, his quarterback, like, it was Ben Roethlisberger. He had games where he caught 7 passes for 30 yards. Like, Patrick Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think, you know, with this, with a loss of Hill, maybe fantasy wise is gonna be down maybe 6 or 7. You know, you would put guys like I would put Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, maybe even Joe Burrow ahead of him, just off the top of my head. But I think Juju, he might be primed for maybe a wide receiver 2 season. It's gonna be,
and it's a risk, and it's risky
still. Absolutely, coming off of an injury. But you know, the quarterback from Ben Roethlisberger to Patrick Mahomes, that's like probably the biggest, like, you know, jump you can have in terms of throwing, pushing the ball down the field, and then also being a focal point of the offense. Travis Kelce, he's probably still going to be the number one tight end drafted. I'm probably going to try to avoid him as much as possible. I don't really
think you want him on your team.
I don't like drafting tight ends early anyway. I like, you know, getting as much value from the top of the draft as I can, and then maybe trying to get a sleeper tight end late. So I probably won't get any Travis Kelce, but he'll probably still be drafted as number one tight end. He's been at that for, what, 6 straight years or something?
Too many, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be really, like this is not something that anyone expected. Not even just the Hill deal, but the Adams deal, leaving Green Bay, just all of these, like, you don't expect this in the NFL. Like, it's just, this is something you expect in baseball, not really in the NFL. These huge, massive contracts, these huge deals in the offseason. Like, you don't see this all the time. So it's going to be a really interesting first few weeks of the regular season.
It's going to be really interesting in that aspect. And then I think you look at some of the more interesting offseason moves that we've seen. Allen Robinson, you know, he goes to the Rams. That could be an interesting one. They get rid of Robert Woods. And I think Robinson, you know, he provides some potential upside, even if OBJ does end up returning there. I believe he's still unsigned.
I believe so. They're and he tore his ACL.
Right,
so
of course. All right, we're gonna scrap that part. Even if Robert, okay, let's redo that part.
Robert Woods is also on the tight
end. No. I think I said that before. All right, yes, and the other interesting thing that we can see is Allen Robinson. He heads off to the Rams. It's been years of quarterback abyss. Sometimes it hasn't even mattered. He's had horrific quarterback play and horrific offenses. He's been stuck with Matt Nagy for years, and now he's finally free from all that, and he goes to the Super Bowl champion L.A. Rams. OBJ tears his ACL, obviously. Robert Woods is shipped off. He's in Tennessee. All of a sudden, the number 2 job is open for Allen Robinson, and there's a lot of upside there. As we've seen, this Rams offense can always support multiple pass catchers, and Robinson, that could be an intriguing move.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen Allen Robinson, just the history of this guy, it's just tough to look at. I mean, he's had tough. 2 major injuries in his career. He put up a 1,400-yard season with Blake Bortles. Then he was with the Bears. He had to deal with Mitch Trubisky and Andy Dalton, and now inarguably the best quarterback he's ever played with in Matt Stafford, the reigning Super Bowl champion. And it's going to be really interesting because he's been the number one guy in every single offense he's played in, and now he's going to be you know, behind Cooper Kupp. And this Allen Robinson is an outside guy. He's got a big body, profiles like Mike Evans, and Cooper Kupp is the slot guy in this offense, is more shifty. But Cooper Kupp is obviously the number one guy. He is the best wide receiver in the NFL last season, best fantasy I think best fantasy player in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think Allen Robinson is going to complement that really well, because we saw Odell. With
put Cooper value. Kupp, he put up value.
Valuable numbers, 100-yard games, a lot of touchdowns. I think he had 5 touchdowns when he was traded over or signed over with the Rams. So it is going to be really interesting to see Allen Robinson there. I think that's a really great landing spot for him. And then, of course, definitely ups Matt Stafford's value as well to have a guy like Allen Robinson there. He's still got Cooper Kupp, not Robert Woods anymore, but of course Robert Woods was injured for a large part of last season. So I think Allen Robinson is a great signing for the Rams, and I think for his value, I think we're finally going to see him, you know, reach that potential that everyone has kind of thought that he's had. I mean, a 1,400-yard season with Blake Bortles. Imagine what this guy can do with
Madison. Yeah, that's an intriguing one. And you mentioned receivers with better quarterback play, and that brings us to the quarterback movement. It's been all over the place. It's hard to keep track of because there's quarterback moves that happened like months ago that were huge deals, and then there were bigger deals that completely made those deals fall off anyone's radar screen, but they all do come back to having value. The first one I want to talk about, and one of the biggest ones, is Russell Wilson being traded to Denver. It's a huge move, and it has implications on a lot of levels. It has implications for both the team that he came from, Seattle, DK Metcalf. We can talk about that in a minute. But from the Broncos' perspective, this trade is absolutely huge. They've had abhorrent quarterback play for a long time, and seemingly the weapons put into place that can really excel when they have that pass thrower that can get them the ball. How good Russell Wilson actually is as a quarterback, Could be debated as well whether he's that good, but whatever he is, he's substantially better than Drew Locke or anyone else they've had before, and it makes a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, it's a debate to say, you know, is Russell Wilson still the MVP caliber guy that he's been in the past? I think he still is. I think
better than Teddy.
Better than Teddy, obviously better than some of the other players that the Broncos have had under center, just off the top of my head. I don't know if Paxton Lynch ever played an NFL game with them, but he's one of the guys that I just think about. Kendall Hinton as well.
Oh, Kendall Hinton.
Kendall Hinton, that's a deep cut. Legend. Drew Locke, just all of these guys. And it is really interesting. I mentioned Doug Baldwin before, but Jerry Jeudy and Doug Baldwin, their route running, you know, Doug Baldwin obviously one of the best route runners in the entire game, or was when he was at his peak. But Jerry Jeudy has some, you know, he's got some moves to him. So I think Jerry Jeudy is going to be a great complement to Russell Wilson. Obviously, Cortland Sutton there as well, a big body wide receiver, and then Tim Patrick as well. I think this offense, like, you can kind of look at it like, Cortland Sutton is kind of like DK Metcalf. Jerry Jeudy is kind of like Tyler Lockett. Like, there are comps.
Sutton's going to be the guy, yeah.
I think Sutton, exactly, yeah. And I'm going to the Seahawks side. You know, you got to feel for Noah Fant. Like,
man, he's like, just stuck with Locke, yeah.
That was like, I was like,
can't shake him.
Because that part of the deal wasn't revealed immediately. So I was like, oh, cool. Like, Noah Fant's going to have a good quarterback. And then it's like, Noah Fant is also going to Seattle with Drew Locke, so that's tough. But, you know, maybe Drew Locke can get something going. I don't really think so.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's going to be a tough season for Seattle.
It's tough for Metcalf, too. You know, they might be drafting someone at quarterback. It's not a great situation that they're left in without Wilson. But I think it just gives the entire Broncos team so much more kind of credibility. And then from the perspective himself of Wilson, there's a lot of potential here. You know, you get Nathaniel Hackett in here. And there's a lot of upside for this entire Broncos team. It kind of just makes them, like, fun. And they've been a team that's one of the least fun teams just because it's like a drag. And I think, you know, the running back perspective, too, is obviously something you look at. I mean, we could discuss this on a later episode, too, but Javonte Williams is probably going to be a first-round pick in a lot of places this year. And how does that factor in? There's a lot of moving pieces here, but I think the Denver offense is just going to be a lot more fun and a lot more explosive than they have been in a few years, probably since Manning was there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, Javonte Williams is someone that I was really into last season. I thought he would be able to distance himself from Melvin Gordon. He really wasn't able to.
No.
Melvin Gordon had some injury trouble. He's an older running back. So, but I think we don't know if Melvin Gordon is going to stay on the Broncos yet. He hasn't been dealt. But if he does remain with the Broncos, I don't see them going to Javonte Williams full time. I think it's probably at best for Javonte Williams, it's going to be a 60-40 time.
I don't get the first round thing for him. I just don't see it.
You said that Javonte Williams will be picked in.
No, that's what everyone's saying.
Right, okay.
But I don't personally, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos GM said he'd like to have Melvin Gordon back, and, you know, he would say that if Gordon does return, he would continue to split work with Javonte Williams. So I don't know, like, neither of these players, when they're on the field at the same time, exceeded a 60% snap share. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to continue. I really don't see why Denver would want this to continue. Maybe, you know, the veteran presence of Gordon helping the development of Javonte Williams. But, you know, Gordon, his yards per carry just has dropped throughout the entire season. Fewest fantasy points per game at 12.2 last season.
But he's also a touchdown guy. He's a red zone guy.
Yeah.
And that all is going to look so much better when you don't have three and outs every possession because it's Teddy Bridgewater. You know, I like Teddy, but it's going to look so different with Wilson.
Yeah, I think like you were talking about with Williams, like there is significant risk of overpaying for this guy.
Yeah.
Like if things break for Javonte Williams, maybe
Melvin I think Gordon, if Gordon doesn't come back though.
Yeah, then I think he's a top 12 running back. I don't know necessarily if he's a first round running back. But Melvin Gordon also he struggled with ball security, 10 fumbles in his past three seasons. That's something that, you know, obviously coaches just don't really tolerate at all. So Williams has that potential. Obviously, we're recording this a long time until the NFL season starts.
Yeah.
So we can't really speak to, you know, what this offense is going to look like in terms of Javonte Williams. But we know it's going to be a stronger offense because of Russell Wilson.
Now, moving along to our next quarterback on the list, we have your guy.
It's my quarterback.
Your quarterback. That's your QB. Washington Commanders Carson Wentz. We mentioned before how Allen Robinson was finally playing with the best quarterback of his career in Matthew Stafford. And that pathetically also applies to Terry McLaurin, who has played with terrific quarterbacks in his career, that Carson Wentz will be hands down the best quarterback he has ever played with. Carson Wentz is not a good quarterback, but when you're comparing it to Taylor Heineke, no disrespect, maybe even Ryan Fitzpatrick, Dwayne Haskins, I mean, like, you go up and down the list, it's been horrific for years. Carson Wentz is at least a semi-competent NFL quarterback, and that's good for McLaurin, and for Wentz himself, this is not a great situation. He's not really a fantasy-relevant guy, but I think what he can provide to the rest of the offense makes a guy like McLaurin relevant in fantasy this year.
Yeah, just to add to that QB list that McLaurin has caught.
Oh, yeah, add. Yeah, I know you're familiar.
Alex Smith, you know, not bad.
Not bad,
no,
Alex.
The Washington football team to a 6-3 start before he got hurt. But then there's Dwayne Haskins, there's Colt McCoy, there's Case Keenum, there's Kyle Allen, there's Taylor Heineke, and then there's Garrett Gilbert, who was the third stringer.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Yeah. Dallas Cowboys legend Garrett Gilbert, that is.
Legend.
So Terry McLaurin, he's had a tough drop in terms of quarterbacks, but you know, Carson Wentz, Pro Football Focus's 10th highest graded quarterback on passes thrown 20 plus yards downfield at 93.3. Heineke was ranked 40th in that metric at 53.4. Not great at pushing the ball downfield was Taylor Heineke. So, you know, it's a better situation for Terry McLaurin. I think that goes without saying. Obviously, it's going to be one of those situations where the quarterback helps the wide receiver a lot more than the wide receiver is going to help the quarterback in terms of fantasy potential. But this Commanders offense, maybe I'm biased, I 100% am, but I think they're going to be really good, you know?
I think you need to look in the mirror. But moving along, speaking of people that need to look in the mirror, the Cleveland Browns, who decided to give 3 first-round picks and the largest guaranteed contract in NFL history to a guy with 22 allegations of sexual misconduct. There's a lot of complicating factors involved in this, and we won't get into all of them. But what we do need to get into is there's so many moving parts with this team, because first of all, Watson presents a huge upgrade over Baker Mayfield on the field. He also is probably going to be suspended for some, if not all, of this season. So how do you know about drafting those people? It's really confusing what to even do with Cleveland right now, and we might have more information in the next coming weeks and months as the NFL continues to do their investigation into Watson and make their recourse of what the punishment is going to be from the league's perspective. But that being said, purely on the field, this is a huge upgrade for Watson, because he's out of that Texans team to a team with better weapons, with better offensive coaching, and it's also a huge upgrade to the players. They get Amari Cooper, and everyone on that Browns team will be lifted up by having a quarterback as good as Watson, leaving aside all the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the big question here, you mentioned it, is if Watson is going to be suspended. I think the assumption among NFL writers that he's going to be suspended for any length of time. We don't know how long is he going to be the starter for 6 games, 8 games, or is he going to be out for the entire season. I mean, we saw Kareem Hunt gets suspended for 8 games before joining the Browns because of his domestic violence situation. So there's going to be a lot of question marks here. The good news for fantasy, at least, is that we have a fair amount of time before the season starts. The NFL is conducting an investigation. But I think the big news here, it's the end of the Baker Mayfield era in Cleveland. He's probably going to go somewhere.
Unless Watson gets suspended the whole season. But they hate each other. Baker hates the Browns.
Yeah.
But it is a good question. Like, if he gets suspended, they don't really have anywhere to go to. I think Nick Chubb's value, though, kind of increases in that situation with that Watson, because they're going to need to give it to him so much, and he's probably the best running back in the league. And I don't think this can go well, you know, you don't think?
Best running back in the league? Jonathan Taylor, maybe?
Oh, not volume, not fantasy running back.
Oh, okay.
Running back. Real life running back, not fantasy.
I mean, you would think Cordarrelle Patterson would be up there based on previous podcasts.
Cordarrelle Patterson, top 10 fantasy running back.
Top 2 fantasy running backs.
Well, top 2, you know, hey, we don't have to go back to old. We don't have to air dirty laundry. But that was once a take of mine. That is factual. But I think that, you know, Chubb is really good, and that entire team, they have so much talent there. Bringing in Cooper, I like that move for them. Cooper kind of was toiling away as that second wheel. He was hurt a bunch in Dallas. Now he's able to come to a situation where he's clearly the guy. And especially if he is, that's really contingent on Watson, though. With Watson, I think Cooper can be great. Without him, I don't really think Cooper has that much relevance.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the huge addition when Odell Beckham Jr. was to the Browns, and then Baker Mayfield really couldn't get the ball to him. I mean, you see those highlights that Baker Mayfield just couldn't hit him wide open. And I mean, Amari Cooper leaving, this is huge for CeeDee Lamb. I love CeeDee Lamb. Like, he was, his second season last year was a breakout season, 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns, but he's capable of so much more. This guy is so talented. And, you know, he knows that, like, the spotlight's going to be on him, right? Mike Gallup's going to be able to take some of the pressure off of him. But he had 10 games last season with at least 6 targets, and in those 10 games, he scored at least 17 PPR points 7 times. So that's something that we should see throughout the entire season, because there were some games, I mean, the first game of the season comes to mind, CeeDee Lamb put up 7 catches for 100-plus yards and a touchdown, but Amari Cooper in that same game had 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. So there's something to be said there that CeeDee Lamb is going to take a step forward because he doesn't have, you know, Amari Cooper in that offense overshadowing him. But, you know, in 2021, just under 15 fantasy points per game for Amari Cooper. I think he's going to be drafted as a wide receiver one for sure. He was being drafted.
Oh, around, wide receiver one.
Oh, not the wide receiver one, a
okay,
wide receiver.
Okay, good,
one.
Good, good.
But
making sure.
Yeah, but, you know, I think this is a great situation. Dak Prescott still in that offense. Yeah. So I really like
him. And the consistency should improve, right?
Because right, he's yeah.
been now having, you know, being around for a couple of years, having Dak healthy, the chemistry. Him being healthy too, that all plays into, I think, what's going to make a really good season for him. I want to do a couple of running back things though, because, you know, we've had the running backs, a lot of it obviously you have to evaluate after the context of the draft, stuff like that. The Dolphins though, we talked about them with Hill and Waddle and that situation, but they've just been active on the free agency market with their running backs as well. They signed Chase Edmonds, and then they followed the Chase Edmonds signing, and then everyone, you know, they signed Chase Edmonds, and everyone's like, oh my god, Edmonds top 15 back, like, this is huge, whatever. And then a couple days later, they signed Raheem Mostert to a deal, and then it's like, I don't know what's going on there. So there's a couple different backfields like that one to monitor. I do want to, you know, an early take, I have Christian McCaffrey.
Ooh.
What are we thinking about McCaffrey? Because, you know, he didn't play much last season. He didn't get much action on the field, but he'd scored over 20 points in 4 of his 5 games he did play last season. The Panthers are a weird situation. They're probably going to draft a quarterback, but early take, early. What are we thinking?
I don't know. Like, I just kind of feel bad for Christian McCaffrey. Just the quarterback situation is tough. He is an immensely talented running back. I think he's still going to be drafted pretty high. I mean, the allure of that skill set, of that you know, that just insane season where he put up, I think, over 300 fantasy points in a PPR league. That was, I think, 2019 or something like that. But, you know, I think, like, a guy like Jonathan Taylor is going to be drafted ahead of him. I think, you know, you might see Nick Chubb drafted ahead of him. Just these workhorse backs that have shown that they can stay healthy. And, you know, an interesting note, I want to go back to Raheem Mostert.
Oh, yes, sir.
The coach of the Dolphins is Mike McDaniel.
Yes,
he was with the Niners. So Raheem Mostert might have an edge in that offense because, you know, they know each other. They know the scheme pretty well. So, but, of course, Raheem Mostert, one of the most injury-prone running backs in the entire league. So that is going to be tough. I really like Raheem Mostert
and,
going into last
and
season.
And the ripple effect of that, as we've been talking about all podcasts, Elijah Mitchell. The doorways have opened for. I know he's your guy.
He's my guy. I picked him up after the first week last season,
and
he gave me 25 points in the fantasy championship. So, but, you know, Trey Sermon's still there. I think he fell out of favor a little bit with the Niners coaching staff with Kyle Shanahan. But I think that, you know, Kyle Shanahan loves multiple running back committees. So I think we're going to see Sherman and Mitchell split. But we've seen Mitchell get 20 plus carries on a consistent basis in this offense. So I think Mitchell is going to be drafted higher than Sermon, but I think Sermon might be a good, like, sneaky late round pick.
Could be a sneaky one. We'll have more notes on that in the coming weeks. But we do have, you know, a few more people that we might want to hit here. We are contractually obligated to mention the Lions and Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was a big fan of the podcast last year. I know he was a loyal listener of ours. We supported him a lot. We helped each other out.
Absolutely,
last season.
Yeah.
And I think he's primed for a big season. And the Lions team as a whole, you know, we'll see what they do with that second pick. There's some people that are saying they could draft a quarterback, but I think even with Goff, they can take a bit of a step up. They've done a nice job in free agency filling a few holes. And, you know, like, there's teams, I think there's value across the board in some guys you look at on some of these worst teams. You look at Kyle Pitts in Atlanta, another guy kind of like St. Brown, who is coming into his second season and could be taking another step up even on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, he was the wide receiver too from weeks 13 to 17.
Yes, he was.
Behind only Cooper Kupp. This guy is just, he was the league winner for me in 3 or 2 leagues. So, you know, I obviously have bias towards him. And in those final six games, Tim Boyle started 2 of those games. Like, St. Brown is the guy that he's not quarterback proof because he's just a rookie. He's only done it over a 6-game sample size. And I mean,
before it was that, 6 games. Right,
before that, he wasn't great. Like, he was with Jared Goff, he wasn't great. But over, but when, you know, he was featured in the offense, you know, it really worked out. So I think in dynasty formats, you know, we don't usually talk about dynasty, but I think you may have wanted to sell high on St. Brown after last season.
Wow, that's pro. Amara, if you're listening right now,
I'm sorry. I'm
not associated with him. There's no association. Yeah,
I think he's still going to be really good this year. I think he's probably going to be overvalued a little bit. I'm sorry.
Oh man, we got a hater here.
I'm sorry. You know, I think he's probably going to be drafted as a lower tier wide receiver two. I think he's probably going to be a wide receiver three with Hawkinson.
Wide receiver three. Wow, this is just this.
You know, I got to be a realist. Like,
hey, you know, that's why
you helped me out a lot. I really appreciate.
That's why he's a finesser, because he knows how to stray his emotions from facts.
I really appreciate those rushing touchdowns, the 2-point conversions, the touchdowns at the end of last season. So, you know, please know I always will appreciate you.
Yes. That. But I also mentioned Kyle Pitts, and I wanted to bring up him too, because I think in some ways he is in a similar category. He's not quite like St. Brown. Obviously, they're both rookies last season. They both came in Pitts with much higher expectations than St. Brown. But they both entered their second season with this kind of, they had some, you know, really high points. They also had some low points. St. Brown's high points came at the end, which is why they're fresh in their mind, and they were during the fantasy playoffs. Pitts were earlier on in the season, especially when he had Ridley. But I don't think that Pitts really gets enough attention and enough appreciation for the fact that only Kelce and Mark Andrews had more yards last season from the tight end position than Kyle Pitts. You know, quarterback situation obviously is not great right now for Atlanta. They really wanted to get Watson. They didn't end up getting him. But I think across the board...
Oh, Mariota is their quarterback.
Mariota is their quarterback now. Yeah, yes. And I think
if I stepped on your point.
No. I think it's a good point, though. Because now you have Mariota. You said it's a step down for Matt Ryan. But I think Pitts can really produce and mature. Tight end, not a position that traditionally comes in and has really good rookie production. Pitts was really good last year, even if maybe the expectations were even higher. I think it's a great target for next year.
Yeah, I mean, he joined Mike Ditka as the only rookie tight end to tally an 1,000-yard receiving season. And also, you know, he only had one touchdown last season. Yeah. Like, this Atlanta offense was really bad, and I think that's a number that you would think would regress in a positive direction, that he's probably going to get, you know, like there's a classic tight end touchdown marker that, you know, you're not Travis Kelce, you're not George Kittle, you get like 5 or 6 touchdowns. Like, that in and of itself is going to give, you know, Pitts a fair amount of points, more than he had last season, on top of the 1,000-yard production, on top of the reception. So I think he's primed for a good year. He's probably going to be overvalued, but tight ends in general,
I think he's not overvalued. I don't think he's overvalued. I think he's going to be undervalued, because I think people are going to look at the Mariota thing.
Right.
And that's part of why it's a conversation I have now based on the offseason, because we talked about the higher profile quarterbacks and offenses that are,
I feel like we're going to see them draft a wide receiver, right?
But it would make sense for them to draft a wide receiver. They have a good pick. As I mentioned, they wanted to give up everything for Deshaun Watson, and Watson ended up not wanting to go there, which is reasonable because they have no one on the roster, and they would have nowhere to get better because they would have given up everything for Watson. It makes sense from that standpoint, but I do think that's interesting. Another guy, I want to talk about this for a second. Did Pittsburgh upgrade their quarterback this year by going from the corpse of Ben Roethlisberger to a player that already is a corpse in Mitchell Trubisky?
You know what? I think that they 100% upgraded. I was on Twitter. I was saying I wanted Mitchell Trubisky to be my Washington Commanders quarterback.
That's a bad tweet.
That was a fantastic tweet. I stand by it. I think Mitch Trubisky is a solid NFL quarterback. You know, I think
that's an interesting statement, but continue.
You know, maybe the stats don't back it up. I don't have the stats in front of me, you know, but I think, you know, there were instances in his career with the Bears where he showed that he could put, you know, solid games together and also help out, you know, the fantasy options on that team. I think Najee Harris is going to be a lot better with Mitch Trubisky.
Najee Harris, I agree.
I think, you know, Deontay Johnson probably is going to be better.
What about the Muth?
You know what? The Muth is always going to be Luth. I think we can just say that. But, you know, I think this offense, it's not taking, like, a massive step forward. I'm not saying Trubisky's Patrick Mahomes. I'm saying that Trubisky is better than Ben Roethlisberger, and that I'm saying Mitch Trubisky would have been better than Taylor Heineke for the Commanders. Like, it's not, like, a huge... Yeah. Like, I don't think he's amazing, But, you know, I never, you know, I guess I understand the hate because they picked him ahead of Mahomes. I think they picked him, like, second overall in that draft. So the hate is understandable for Bears fans, but I obviously from the outside looking in, like, I thought he would be a fine quarterback. Wentz is my quarterback now. I'm going to get a Wentz jersey, obviously, but...
That's a waste of
money. I don't know. I probably won't get a Commander jersey on anyway. Maybe
McCoy. The new jersey design is solid, though.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think, you know, I think Mitch Trubisky, you're not going to draft him as a fantasy football quarterback, right? But
no.
You're seeing the offense. You're seeing Najee Harris. You're seeing Deontay Johnson. You're seeing Pat Freiermuth. I think that they're going to take a step forward because they have a competent passer. You know, competent, maybe is too strong. They have a passer who won't fall flat on his face when he throws the ball like Ben Roethlisberger does occasionally. So I think, you know, Harris, Pat Freiermuth, and Deontay Johnson, they're gonna be solid fantasy producers.
I agree. Do you have, before we get out of here, do you have any other notes that you would like to profess to our large audience?
You know, I might. Let me just pull up a thing so I know what to say. Oh, actually, I do have one. So I think Michael Pittman is primed for
another. Oh, we didn't talk about the Colts.
Yeah, the Colts, they have Matt Ryan now. Maybe not. You know, it is kind of a trend with the Colts. They got Phillip Rivers that one season, and then he retired. I have a feeling Matt Ryan's probably going to hang it up after this season if it doesn't go as planned. But Michael Pittman, I mean, he was solid with Carson Wentz. He put together a pretty solid season. It's not. We're not saying he's going to be the next Julio Jones to Matt Ryan on the Colts, but I think he's going to be solid. He's one of the you know, profiled as one of the better wide receivers, maybe wide receiver two option, wide receiver three option last year. I think, you know, as the number one pass game option for Ryan, I think he's gonna have a solid season. I think he's going to be an undervalued guy because of the quarterback.
Matt Ryan is not exciting.
No,
he's boring. He's specifically boring.
That's kind of his thing.
That's his thing. But there is value there by being boring in fantasy if you can get him later. Right now, The Athletic has Pittman as their wide receiver 22 overall, and I think that is a little low. I happen to agree with you about that ranking.
They have Jalen Waddle ahead of him. I would rather have him than Jalen Waddle.
I agree. Because I think there's a reliability with Pittman. Right. Like, he's, you know what you're going to get from him. And I think that's a good one because, like, he's going to be reliable. That offense, I mean, who do they have? Like, T.Y. Hilton is still under contract, believe it or not. They don't really have that many options, though. Like, Mo Alley Cox,
Nyheim Hines, somehow one of the higher-paid running backs in the entire league.
Yes.
No disrespect to Nyheim Hines. He has a role. He does it well. If you're listening, Nyheim, you know, I still love you. But, you know, this is obviously going to be a run-first offense.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan signing, you know, kind of cements that with Jonathan Taylor back there in the backfield. But I think, you know, with the opportunities Michael Pittman is going to get, because, I mean, the top wide receiver on offense is always going to get, you know, some semblance of opportunity. I think he's going to be solid. I think, you know, he's probably going to be drafted a little low. But there are guys like just looking at the Athletic rankings, like, I think Jalen Waddle's probably going to finish lower than him. He's the second fiddle, or, you know, profiled to be the second fiddle on his offense. I would say Tua's probably not going to be a better quarterback than Matt Ryan in fantasy. I mean, maybe he, if he takes a step forward. But I think Michael Pittman is going to be solid for next year. But, of course, there is a lot of time left. There is still the NFL draft. There's still, you know, potential other signings to go, so...
And the last one we leave off with here before we close out today is Jameis Winston, the New Orleans Saints. The Saints just made a trade with the Eagles.
I don't think I can break that one down.
We can't break down. We go to Northeastern, not Harvard. Therefore, we do not have the mathematic capability to even comprehend that trade. But that being said, from the standpoint of the New Orleans Saints, now you have Jameis Winston, Michael Thomas, like, it's like he didn't exist, but he actually still is on the team and, like, could be good, I guess. I mean, it's hard to know. He kind of had this stretch with Breeze, and now it's kind of hard to say what to do with him. Kamara was, like, super streaky last season. He wasn't getting as many targets as he had in the past, so I don't know what to make of the Saints, but Jameis will make things interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they had a 4-2 record before he went down with injury. That was a knee injury, and, you know, up and down statistically, but he was good at not turning the ball over. Obviously famous for having a 30-30 season over in Tampa Bay. That's 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. But I think Jameis, he's going to be solid for this offense.
He will be solid. And speaking of solid, that was a solid return episode. We are back 3 months. We thank you guys for making it with us through the three-month break and through this episode. We will be back hopefully soon, breaking things down after the draft, you know, around that time when we get more roster movement as we get closer to the fantasy season. Of course, keep it locked. We'll have some baseball coverage as well, which we know you like as well. Now for Colin Kapoor, I'm Maddie Wasser signing off, and we will see you next time on the Fantasy Finessers podcast.